Now came the moment of truth. The mimic had to form the actual wheels. It did this by pumping its biomass reserves into those stumpy legs. 8 long, fleshy rods grew out from each of those, growing outwards until they were just under 60 centimeters in length. The tips of these organic sticks split in two up to around the halfway point, then stretched outwards to form a bent T-shape. The split-up tips then met each other to form one long, flawless circle. Proficiency level increased. Shapeshift is now level 7. Agility plus 1. Dexterity plus 1. Endurance plus 2. It took the mimic about 2 minutes to create 4 spoked faux wood wheels, each with a radius of just over 30 centimeters. What looked like wood was actually condensed and hardened tissue that became a sort of cartilage, an organic, rubbery substance that was good at absorbing vibrations and withstanding impacts. The wheels were positioned in such a way that the chest would have to travel sideways like a miniature wagon filled with teeth and murderous intent. Boxy hesitantly started moving its newly forged feet around. The shape was a bit inconvenient, but couldn't be helped. After all, the wagon it copied them from was longer than it was wider, so the mimic would have to assume a similar construction, at least at first. It was confident that, with some trial and error, it would find the right setup to ensure maximum stability, much like when it created its favorite spider legs for the first time. However, such an adjustment period turned out to be unnecessary. After all, a carriage was chest-shaped, but a spider was not. By copying the work of skilled craftsmen, Boxy actually found very little adjustments that needed to be made. If anything, its imitation product turned out to far surpass the original. After all, the 4 wheels stuck to the side of the creature were living things that could be bent and angled in any direction at will. Feeling proud of itself, Boxy then decided to move around. It flexed the muscles at the base of its axle legs, forcing the wheels to rotate under their own power. That was when it discovered the first major flaw with its brilliant transformation. Power management. The overeager Box put too much power into the motion, causing a sudden burst of acceleration that launched it sideways faster than expected. It traveled several meters in an instant, which then showed the second flaw with its new invention. Your muscles have ripped. HP minus 87. You have been dismembered. HP minus 154. The very muscles used to power the rotational momentum gave out. Although they were flexible and malleable, they had a limit as to how many times they could twist around an axle before tearing. With the tissue holding them in place severed, the freshly grown quartet of wheels and axles detached from the base of the mimic. They rolled off into the distance or flew up into the air, spraying yellow blood all over the place. Their owner, currently busy hissing and cursing at the sudden pain, slammed into the ground and skidded across it for a little bit, scratching up its sensitive underside.
What the fuck is it doing?
Asked Cora with a perplexed look on her face. Moaned Zira with her tongue sticking out and her eyes rolled up into her head.
Right. Good point.
The fiend then gave up on worrying about the silly Box and resumed pounding the face-down ass-up succubus's tight asshole with renewed vigor. Part 6. Having recovered from its pathetic crash, Boxy was forced to re-examine its approach. Creating a detached joint that would allow the wheels to spin as much as they wanted was possible, but it also came with a good amount of risk. Doing that would make it much easier for them to come loose and break off should the monster go over rough terrain. But the mimic could just revert them back into legs if it wanted to go off-road. However, the earlier incident did manage to prove one thing. Moving around on wheels was far easier than walking. So the animate chest decided to give this new mode of transportation another go without feeling disheartened. This was hardly the first time it failed at shapeshifting anyway. It messed up multiple times back when it was still learning how to use those spider legs or how eyes worked, so trial and error was hardly a foreign concept to it. Well, forming these wheels took quite a lot longer than those arachnid limbs, but that was a temporary setback. Muscle memory was a terrifyingly terrific thing that meant even complex creations like Zira's upper body could be thrown together in an instant with enough practice. First of all, however, It needed to deal with the biomass it lost when those prototype wheels flew off into the distance. It was not an insignificant amount. At least rectifying that turned out to be as simple as opening its storage and depositing roughly 5 kilograms of strawberry jam directly into its gullet. It was pretty flavorless to the monster, no different from eating leaves, wood, or spinal fluid, but it would still do the job of replenishing its lost body mass after being digested. Once that was done, it once again grew out those circular limbs in mostly the same fashion, but with one key difference. This time it created the flexible joint at the spot where the wheel and the axle connected, rather than where the limb poked out of its body. That was when it ran into its first major hurdle. It would need to completely detach the wheels from the axles, but doing so would effectively cut them off from its own body. This was not a particularly attractive proposition, as the wheel-shaped body mass would devolve into meat paste once separated from the main body. What about continuously shape-shifting the connecting tissue so that it would untwist, thus preventing it from snapping? That seemed like it might work, so the mimic gave it a try. It willed its new limbs to rotate, taking extra care to use as little strength as possible. The box cart inched forward at a snail's pace. After the wheels made 3 revolutions each, it felt the strain on the connecting tissue and willed it to untwist itself without detaching, then kept moving forward. Doing so allowed it to keep going, covering a distance of several meters before it safely came to a stop. Well, that method worked, but the concentration required to carry out the constant, minute shape-shifting was pretty taxing. Moving in such a manner would be more tiring and slower than simply walking. Plus, allowing momentum to carry it downhill would undoubtedly cause the wheels to spin too fast and tear the connecting tissue anyway, and mere practice would be unable to make it speed up to a point where this wasn't an issue. Unlike the fire-and-forget actions of growing limbs and then using them, this was an ongoing process that required constant attention and muscle flexing. In short, this method of moving around defeated the purpose of having wheels in the first place. Simple walking along and tumbling down a hill would prove to be much easier than...
Aha!
Foxy got an idea. Rather than trying to mimic the entire cart, didn't it only need to focus on the wheels themselves? After all, that dungeon core rolled around just fine even though it was one solid object with no moving parts. Surely something similar was entirely within the mimic's reach. The 4 fleshy discs and their axles were quickly reabsorbed back into its main body, leaving it to sit on the ground. Next, it grew 2 slightly larger wheels about 80 centimeters in diameter on its sides. These were firmly attached to its body and would not rotate at all. Instead of a carriage, the mimic assumed the form of a slightly misshapen spool. As long as it was like this, it could roll around as much as it wanted. Then came another problem. Propulsion. Moving about like this under its own power was going to be difficult, to say the least. It would need a push to get going and yet more pushing to keep rolling. Going downhill was going to be easy enough, but it was still dependent on outside assistance. After all, it couldn't just push itself. Or could it? Technically speaking, the ground wasn't that far away and it still had a good deal of biomass to spare. So it grew out a set of 4 spiderish limbs, much shorter than the usual ones. They were also positioned much differently. 1 poked out from its front, 2nd from behind, 3rd from its bottom, and 3rd from the top of its lid. Preparations complete, Boxy then coiled the leg on the bottom and kicked at the ground with it, pushing itself forward and up. This got the chest rolling ever so slightly forward. Then the leg coming out from its front did the same. Then the top leg. Then the hind leg, then the bottom leg. Each kick added more momentum to its revolution, and soon it was rolling along at an impressive pace. Its current speed was actually close to its full sprint, but it used only a fraction of the effort required to maintain it. It was moving forward in an energy-efficient manner and without hurting itself. So far, so good. But the problem was that this method made its entire body spin around along with the wheels. Even with the monster's magical perception, it looked like the ground was spinning around it at high speeds and gave off the unpleasant sensation that it was constantly falling. Deciding it had had enough, Boxy hit the brakes by causing its wheels to break apart into legs of their own. The sturdy limbs dug into the ground, killing the monster's momentum in an instant. And none too soon. A few meters more, and it would have fallen into that deep canyon that ran alongside the cobblestone road.
"Wow, I was sure it was going to fall off the cliff,"
remarked Zira.
"Tell me about it,"
agreed Korra.
"I guess even that loony box isn't stupid enough to throw itself off a cliff."
The two familiars were currently taking a break between their lewd acts, though it was mostly to let the fiend recover. Even a rape-happy demon from another dimension couldn't keep up with the insatiable succubus's demands. That was the reason both of them were idly observing Boxy's antics while still connected at their lower ends.
"I guess all that intelligence gain wasn't just for show after all, huh?"
mused Zira, while slowly massaging the half-mast member lodged in her rectum.
"Nah, can't be that. I mean, I'm always the same regardless of how much intelligence I have, so it can't be that big a deal."
"You're right. It really doesn't matter for you. You'd need over 9,000 of that attribute before you get any thoughts worth a damn."
"As if! I have plenty of thoughts,"
insisted the fiend.
"Any of them that don't relate to fighting and or fucking?"
"No."
"And that is precisely why I keep telling you to just disappear and leave your dick behind."
"Oh, I'm definitely going to leave my dick inside a behind."
"That was terrible."
Break time was over. Korra's member had suddenly sprung back to life, allowing the two demons to pick up where they left off. Meanwhile, Boxy was already thinking hard about its latest experience. The spool chest accomplished its goals of conserving energy while traveling at high speed, but the inability to properly navigate and steer under such conditions was a major drawback. It would need to keep its body upright and relatively stable if it planned to do either of those things. Its thoughts drifted back to that cart, causing it to once again contemplate whether it should form detached wheels after all. It instinctively knew that would be pointless, but it was worth a shot. It picked itself up off the ground and grew another, much smaller wheel. It attached it to the axle part in exactly the same way as the carriage did, then let go of it. "You have lost a part of your body. HP minus 25. Forcefully separating a part of its flesh caused Boxy to lose HP and biomass. The wheel itself quickly lost pigmentation and consistency and melted into a sort of unidentifiable dull red sludge over the next few seconds, making the whole exercise a waste of time and energy. Such was the downside of having extremely malleable flesh. Once cut away, it would quickly lose its assumed form and turn into what could only be described as a thick, fleshy soup. The mimic was aware this would happen, but it tried it anyway. It actively challenged its instincts in order to get better acquainted with its body. It waited for several seconds for its HP to recover to full, just in case, then tried it again to hold onto the wheel without being directly connected to it. "You have lost a part of your body. HP minus 25. It failed, just as expected. Simply touching the flesh of the wheel was not enough. It needed a medium through which to transmit nutrients and commands to it. It had to be attached and detached at the same time, both a part of it and something else entirely. Was such a paradox possible? Or rather, was stressing over this really that big a deal? Boxy could survive just as well without ever needing to use wheels. Sure, they looked convenient, but that was only on mostly flat terrain, of which the wilderness had a shocking shortage of. Objectively speaking, the box had no reason for wanting wheels. They were, simply put, not necessary to its survival in any way, shape, or form. In fact, given how it had lost quite a bit of HP and nearly threw itself into a ravine, they were more of an enemy than an ally at that point. But the mimic did not give up. It was a creature born of patience, to the point where it was incredibly stubborn and would very rarely change its stance on something. The last time it did that was when the object of its desire ended up causing a magical disaster that wiped out an entire city in an instant. It was safe to assume that it would take a downside of that grand a scale to make it give up on experimenting with those wheels. And so Boxy entered a cycle of growing a wheel and trying to detach it without detaching it, watching it melt into sludge, waiting a short while to recover HP and starting all over again. That lasted for about 30 minutes before it stopped to take a small break and devour yet another normally suicidal amount of strawberry jam to maintain its biomass. While there was no progress on the wheel front, at least it was starting to enjoy the fruit-based condiment somewhat. The taste was still bland, but the thick consistency of it was oddly pleasing. It reminded the mimic of the only piece it managed to rip off that flesh maiden and how it had reverted into a tasty, viscous goop that was a lot denser than it seemed to be. If there was ever such a thing as jam made out of flesh, it would be that. It even remembered finding a piece of her stuck between its teeth later, which was a pleasant surprise. How could something so goopy be so sticky? It was almost like it wanted to become a part of... Huh. Struck with a burst of inspiration, the mimic spent the rest of the night fiddling with and refining the all-important wheel-to-axle joint. After numerous failures and having to replenish its biomass many times, it finally achieved a halfway working prototype. It had created a limb that was completely unlike anything else it or its familiars had ever seen before and something that had no right being part of a living creature. The middle portion was a solid disc with a radius of about 6 centimeters. 25-centimeter-long spokes then came out of it to form the rest of the wheel. The connecting joint between it and the axle leg was also very different from its previous attempts. The unnatural hinge was covered by an equally unnatural wet bulge, a ball of writhing red flesh around 8 centimeters in diameter. It tightly hugged both parts of the solid inner part of the wheel, creating a vacuum-tight seal that was also slippery enough to allow the wheel to turn with minimal friction. And turn it did. Boxy lifted its latest iteration above the ground and stretched out a tongue tentacle. It grabbed one of the spokes and gave it a good yank. It spun smoothly and silently around its axis. Nothing tore up and the wheel didn't wither. Except that the tentatively named flesh jam started leaking around it and splattering everywhere. The exact mix for it needed to be refined, but that was just a minor detail at that point. The solution Boxy had managed to stumble onto was the process known as osmosis. It was a mechanism that allowed nutrients to pass between the mimic and its severed limb by using the flesh jam as a medium. It essentially kept the wheel alive, even after the mimic had severed the solid connection to it. It was even able to send and receive nerve signals, allowing its owner to retain some feeling in it. Satisfied with the slightly flawed result, Boxy decided it was time for a field test. It made 3 other wheels and returned to its box cart form. The issue of propulsion was quickly resolved by sprouting 2 short spider-like legs from its underside, much like how it had done earlier. It used them to push itself forward along the cobblestone road. The wheels spun smoothly, clattering slightly at the small bumps between the rough cobbles. Boxy bent its axle-shaped limbs carefully, altering its course ever so slightly while a lone eye on its side gave it perfect vision as to where it was going. Like this, it had propulsion, navigation, and steering.
Yessa!
It screamed as it rolled down the road at a near-walking pace. Its over-eagerness had gotten the best of it several times already, so for once it was being careful. This lasted for all of 10 seconds before it began gradually building up speed as it used its 2 limbs to push itself faster and faster. Soon it was moving faster than it had ever done so before, and only using about half the energy it needed to maintain its full speed. The joy of succeeding at a difficult task, as well as the rush of moving at such speed, filled Boxy with an overflowing feeling of glee. The intoxicating rush made it want to shout something about yabbaing a dabba, even though it had no idea what any of those words were. It kept practicing with its newfound mobility. Acceleration, abrupt turns, and instant braking were all made possible with the right use of its wheeled limbs. It could even hop into the air at speed to get over rough portions of the cobblestone road. Eventually, the mimic realized it had ended up straying too far from its familiars. It could order them to catch up or resummon them on the spot, but it felt like a good opportunity to get some more box carting practice on the way back. Besides, it had eaten a good chunk of the preserved food it pilfered earlier, so its storage was now empty enough to bring a lot more of those curious, albeit not very useful, items it left behind.
"Get ready! We leave soon!"
it commanded as soon as it got back. The 2 demons, who had been going at it all night, finally remembered they still had a contract to fulfill. So they stopped their silly antics and promptly got ready to hit the road.
"Hey, boss!"
asked Cora.
Why were you trying to copy the card all night?
It had been obvious what it was trying to do, given how obsessed it was with those wheels. Even the two demons who spent the whole night doing lewd things had managed to figure out what its goal was. The mimic then explained it was developing a more energy-efficient mode of transport for itself, though perhaps not precisely in those words.
So, you want to travel without getting as tired?
Confirmed Cora after the needlessly long explanation.
Yes,
it answered.
You could just rest on the cart and have me pull it around, you know. Actually, if we did that, we could even bring all this stuff with us. Not to mention that...
screamed Cora at the mithril dagger that mysteriously appeared in her left eye.
Why?
No reason,
came the casual reply. Truthfully speaking, Boxy wasn't quite sure why it had done that. There was just something about having arms point out the painfully obvious solution that really ticked it off. Chapter 2. Fine Print. Part 1. Three trolls were rushing through the forest. The creatures were roughly 2 meters tall and resembled apes due to their thick necks, short legs, and powerful arms that were almost as long as they were tall. A troll's skin was a thick, brown hide that looked like it could take quite a lot of punishment, and the numerous scars covering these three individuals suggested that they put that claim to the test on a regular basis. Short, brown fur could be seen covering their backs, shoulders, and forearms, giving off a pungent smell. Their faces were truly ugly, with massive foreheads, beady, pitch-black eyes, large, flat noses, and massive underbites that made their disgusting yellow teeth visible to all. These three monsters, however, were not rushing towards some prey they'd caught a whiff of, but running for their very lives. Swinging from branches, charging through bushes, and jumping over rocks, all while practically foaming at the mouth from fear. The agility with which they moved seemed to belie their thick, hulking frames, as nothing motivated the body quite like the imminent threat of death. It was just too bad that mere motivation was nowhere near enough to allow them to escape their pursuer.
Mind blast!
Came an oddly melodic voice from above. Your target has been stunned for 7 seconds. A light blue flash enveloped the head of one of the ape-like creatures. It let out a pathetic yelp and fell down on the ground as if it had momentarily forgotten how limbs worked. A rectangular shadow then leapt down onto it and stuck 2 shining daggers into either side of its skull, killing it instantly. The other 2 trolls kept running without missing a beat. So what if one of their kin was just killed? Stopping to fight that thing was suicide. They should know. Some of the others had already tried and failed horribly. The one to fall just now was the 10th victim, and the 2 running away with all their might were the last survivors. As one might imagine, they were quite keen to keep it that way. But a certain murderous box had other intentions as it gave chase. A few minutes and a couple of mind blasts later, the last of the trolls was wiped out. No matter how much their fear aided in their escape, the smaller, lighter, and more versatile mimic had the clear advantage in this obstacle-ridden terrain. Also, its agility attribute was much higher than that of its quarry, which was a big contributor towards its speed advantage. It chucked the 2 corpses into its storage and went back to the shallow cave the monsters had been inhabiting until recently. Trolls were a species of monster that was common throughout the world. It had many variants that depended on their environment. Subspecies such as cave trolls, forest trolls, magma trolls, ice trolls, zombie trolls, and even bridge trolls all had their own unique characteristics and varied widely in strength. However, 3 things held true among all trolls. The first 2 traits they shared were their tough hides that resisted physical blows and the high-speed regeneration that could heal wounds many times faster than other creatures. Indeed, trading blows with a troll that was of equal or higher level was tantamount to suicide. The best way to kill one was to exploit their universal weakness. Magic. Fire or acid was particularly effective in that regard, but employing methods that involved either of those things would often leave very little of the creatures behind. That was simply bad business. After all, troll hides could be fashioned into sturdy, albeit heavy, leather armor, and their blood was a substance with many arcane and alchemical uses. In fact, said blood was the whole reason for Boxy's little detour. While traveling along the road, the mimic had come across a monster dragging the bloodied carcass of what appeared to be a wild boar. Zira immediately identified it as a troll. That wasn't particularly impressive, considering their appearance was general knowledge to any civilized being above the age of 5. Which was a good thing, too, because that denomination did not include her 3-month-old master. The animate chest and its 2 minions then chased after their target until it led them to its den, a shallow cave it shared with 11 more of its kin. So, all things said and done, Boxy now had a dozen completely intact troll corpses it could harvest for blood. Since its goal wasn't to just kill and eat them, it had to avoid riddling them with wounds like it usually did to its targets. Statistically speaking, though, that statement wasn't quite right. The overwhelming majority of the mimic's victims were vaporized by Dungeon Core going through critical meltdown, but riddled with wounds was definitely second place on that list, followed closely by ripped apart and torn asunder, which were neck and neck for the bronze medal. The point was that all of those methods caused massive blood loss, which would be counterproductive considering its goal. In the end, it had to settle for disabling them with magic and piercing their skulls, minimizing the holes through which they could bleed out. Surprisingly, it ended up having to use Mind Blast rather than Shadow Bind to do so. Mind Blast. Requirements: Level 22 Warlock. Intelligence 100. Mental Fortitude 100. School: Domination. Type: Targeted. Cost: 200 MP. Range: 40 meters. Effects: Assaults the target's consciousness directly, stunning it for 5 seconds. Has no effect on undead, demons, and golems. Shadowbind. Requirements: Level 20 Warlock. Intelligence: 120. School: Ruin. Type: Targeted. Cost: 100 MP. Range: 25 meters. Effects: Chains of darkness wrap around the target, restricting movement for up to 10 seconds. Grows in power in dark places or at night, gaining up to 50% additional effectiveness depending on the environment. The latter seemed to be more powerful at a glance. It had a lower MP cost and a longer effective duration, at least on paper. The problem was that these chains were more fragile than the mimic thought, seeing as how those trolls broke free of the physical restraints within moments. Their speed left something to be desired, but their brute strength would not allow them to be subdued by this spell without using Power Overwhelming or taking advantage of the darkness-associated bonus. The problem was that the former would consume too much MP and the latter was out of the question in the daylight. Even then, it might not be enough to tie down the trolls for long. Mental attacks, on the other hand, were incredibly effective. Those monsters may have been powerful in body, but they were pathetic when it came to mental fortitude. Or defending against magic in general. And thus, the mimic learned an important lesson. Mind Blast was effective against opponents that relied on brawn, and Shadowbind looked to be more useful against caster-type enemies that typically had weaker bodies. And if someone who was proficient in both might and magic showed up, then they would just have to be sliced up the old-fashioned way. Thankfully, these trolls could be taken down without spilling much of their blood, though it took some time. Korra's blunt force attacks were particularly useful since they didn't cause any external bleeding, but it still took her a lot of effort to overwhelm their defenses. Unless, of course, Boxy used the Dark Infusion spell on her. Dark Infusion. Requirements: Level 17 Warlock, Intelligence 60, Mental Fortitude 80. School: Domination. Type: Targeted. Cost: 75 MP. Range: 10 meters. Effects: Increases your target's strength, agility, dexterity, and intelligence attributes by 20% for 30 seconds. Your target will be stunned for 5 seconds once the effect expires or is dispelled. The stun component of this spell has no effect on undead, demons, and golems. This spell actually boosted those 4 attributes by 28% thanks to the effects of the Domination Mastery skill, which was currently at level 4. The duration of the power-up was still half a minute, so it would be safe to assume the stun that followed it was equally unaffected by the related mastery. The upshot and physical ability arms displayed was truly impressive, however. It made Boxy curious as to just how powerful it would get if it were to use dark infusion on itself, though it immediately found out such a thing was impossible. Domination spells, dark infusion included, had no effect on the one using them. After all, that entire school of magic was centered around forcing the caster's will onto others, so something like affecting one's own mind was impossible. Admittedly, even if Boxy could empower itself, it wasn't sure whether dark infusion would have as pronounced an effect as it did on arms. Not only was strength the fiend's most well-developed attribute, but she also had a special skill that made each point of it way more potent. Idiotic strength. Fiends are by nature demons with more brawn than brains, but this trait is noticeably more pronounced in pit fiends. Requirements: be born as a pit fiend. Type: passive. Range: self. Effects: increases the effects of the strength attribute by 5% per level of this skill. Reduces the effects of the intelligence attribute by 5% per level of this skill. Although this seemed like it would be just as detrimental as it was beneficial, it was also a skill that was almost uniquely tailored for someone like Arms. She was a demon who fought entirely with physical means and didn't really need to spend MP in order to pummel something into dust. Therefore, the already tiny MP pool becoming even tinier was a moot point. Even the active skills from her fiend job didn't care that she currently had less than 150 MP. Second Wind. Fiends are by nature too stubborn to die. Requirements: level 10 fiend. Type: active. Activation time: instant. Cost: 0 MP. Range: self. Effects: instantly recovers 25% of missing HP. Increases the HP recovered by this skill by 20% per level of this skill. This skill may not be activated more than once every 24 hours. Demonic Carapace. Fiends are by their nature incredibly thick-skinned. Requirements: level 15 fiend. Type: active. Activation time: instant. Cost: 50% of max MP. Range: self. Effects: reduces all incoming damage by 30% for 10 seconds. Increases the duration of this skill by 10% per level of this skill. Second Wind was an enviable skill, one the Mimic badly wanted for itself. Unfortunately, it was something that only a fiend could use. Which wasn't all that bad, as it was possible to bypass the 24-hour usage restriction on it if Arms died and was resummoned. This was because, barring a few notable exceptions, the powers and abilities gained from one's status were bound to their physical bodies. Resummoning the fiend and giving her a brand new body would give her a fresh, unused copy of all her skills, this one included. As for Demonic Carapace, it was a skill that appeared after the Dungeon Core meltdown caused the Mimic's level to skyrocket. Activating this skill caused Korra's entire body to temporarily become covered in gray metal scales that glistened with an unnatural red sheen. The material seemed to be the same fiend steel substance that her gauntlets and boots were made of. Incidentally, the creation of said items was handled by her demonic armament skill, and their performance would increase in direct proportion to its level. Arms could take them off any time she wished, though doing so would make them disappear in seconds. They would also take a few hours to grow back, so removing them accomplished nothing but to neuter both the demon's attack and defense. As for Snack, all of her equipment was largely decorative, serving no practical purpose other than helping her bamboozle her victims. Which wasn't to say that familiars were barred from wielding gear made by and for mortals. It was just the case that very few summoners saw the need to do something silly like give actual arms or armor to their demons. While it would make them more effective, it also meant that those items would most likely be lost when the demon was slain in combat. Which happened a lot, as they were often treated like the expendable pawns that they were. This was especially true of fiends who traditionally had no other method of attack except engaging enemies in close combat. So it was a good thing they came with their own custom-made equipment. Otherwise, they wouldn't be anywhere near as good at their jobs. Boxy returned to the former troll den while reviewing what it knew about its minions. Even if it lacked much of the world's common sense and general knowledge, the Mimic's combat instincts and battle awareness were rapidly developing. It recognized it had to be well-versed in the strengths and weaknesses of all participants in a fight if it wanted to secure victory, so analyzing its familiars was something it did a lot during the downtime when they were traveling. Speaking of which, Boxy found one of said minions, namely Arms, was busy handling the 9 troll corpses the Mimic had left behind. She was squeezing them one after the other, coaxing the blood out of their stiffening bodies as if she was getting juice out of a lemon. The bodily fluids were collected in a large barrel that used to be full of strawberry jam until the animate chest devoured it all to fuel its bio-wheel research.
"Drain these two,"
it commanded while taking the last 3 corpses out of its storage.
"Oh, hey, boss, it's fine if a few extra bits get into the stuff, right?"
asked Cora, wringing out a troll's arm as if it were a wet cloth.
"I can't seem to get the blood out without getting clumps of hair and broken bones in it."
"It's fine," declared the Mimic.
"All right, cool. Are these the last ones, then?"
"Yes."
"Thank fuck! This blood-wrangling thing is really fucking dull. It would go faster if Master buffed me up again. So, can you do that?"
she added with a hint of anticipation in her voice.
"Okay."
Boxy saw no reason to deny her request since its MP was almost back to full and she would be doing all the work anyway. The knockoff Zira appeared instantly as if she had been hiding inside the chest the whole time and raised a hand towards the giddy fiend.
"Dark infusion!"
A black mist enveloped Cora in an instant. It seeped into her skin, turning it several shades darker. Her already well-defined muscles bulged out even more as her entire body became one size wider, straining the thin fabric of her white top and hot pants. The already skin-tight clothing dug into her flesh, conforming perfectly to her form. It was at a stage where she might as well have been nude for all the good it did.
"Oh, yeah!"
she growled, rubbing her hands all over her body.
"This stuff makes me feel amazing! Like I can beat the shit out of a steel golem with 3 arms tied behind my back!"
She then went back to squeezing the blood out of yet another dead troll with great gusto. The syrupy red liquid and other miscellaneous bits that poured out of it was collected inside the wooden barrel at significantly greater speeds. The disgusting soup was actually going to fill the former jam container to the brim at this rate, which suited Boxy just fine. After all, it needed that blood to get started on performing demonic rituals and increasing the proficiency level of its demonology skill. Getting that all the way to level 8 seemed like it would take a long time, but it would be well worth the investment. Having an extra familiar was going to be a huge boon, considering both of its current minions were quite excellent. The animate chest even became a tiny bit jealous whenever it took a glance at Arms' status. General information. Coralentoprix Kasusun Coenthioxa. Fiend. Pit. Female. 321 years old. Level 17 Fiend, level 12 Berserker, 1,230 out of 1,282 HP, plus 1.9 per second, 144 out of 178 MP, plus 0.3 per second. Attributes: Strength, 254, Dexterity, 105, Agility, 148, Endurance, 198, Intelligence, 42, Wisdom, 33. Mental Fortitude, 165. That strength attribute was especially enviable, as it was pretty much double what the Mimic had. Admittedly, she had Dark Infusion boosting her abilities, but she still had just under 200 strength even without it. Looking at that attribute score and then considering the muscle-bound behemoth it was empowering left little doubt that Cora's attacks would be far more devastating than Boxy's. The only way the Mimic could keep up with her was if assassination or ruin magic came into play, but even those would only provide a burst of destructive power compared to the fiend's ceaseless barrage of fists. The shapeshifter would reach an equivalent conclusion if it compared itself with Zira, who was arguably already a more dangerous spellslinger than Boxy was.
Master! It ran out! More, please! Dark Infusion!
Boxy was steadily starting to feel the downside of splitting its level and attributes between martial combat and the mystic arts. Using both at the same time was pretty much impossible, after all. Crystallized magic helped, but that was a temporary solution that lasted only as long as it had spell crystals. It was theoretically possible to prepare more of those while in combat, but the mimic might as well just cast its spells directly at the enemy to preserve MP. Assassination was the opposite in that regard. The mimic wanted to use it repeatedly in combat, but the nature of the skill made that an impossibility. In short, Boxy's combat effectiveness would deteriorate rapidly as a battle went on. A lot of its damage was front-loaded, after all. While it was true such things weren't much of a problem right now, that would change rapidly if it came face-to-face with another worthy opponent like that Steel Great or the Flesh Maiden. The mimic was starting to understand it would need to rely on its familiars a lot more than initially anticipated, so it was honestly quite pleased with how they had turned out.
"Master? More?"
Cora asked expectantly.
"Dark Infusion!"
Both demons could keep fighting for a long time, thereby covering one of its weaknesses. They could also be used as expendable sacrifices to cover the mimic's retreat should the need arise. It was the least they could do, considering how much work Boxy put into training its demon-related skills. Strengthening them was the only reason it bothered with this troll blood business to begin with.
"Master, I found some more trolls,"
reported Snack through the thought link.
"There's roughly 6 of them, about 2 kilometers south of where you are."
The succubus was currently under orders to seek out other potential prey from the sky, although that was mostly an excuse to get her away from the troll den. If she were to use her fire magic, the only thing left of those trolls would be ash and cinders. Even a 3-month-old Box knew it couldn't get blood from those, though Boxy began to question if it really needed any more of the stuff.
"Arms, are you done yet?"
"Pretty much. This is the last one,"
answered the fiend. Admittedly, her brutish method of extracting the monster's bodily fluids was by no means ideal, but it seemed to be effective.
"How much blood?"
asked Boxy.
"Barrel's kind of full, actually."
In other words, 60 liters of troll blood. Admittedly, it wasn't pure, since there were some miscellaneous bits floating inside, but that was surely more than enough.
"Snack, forget the monsters and come back. I need you for the ritual."
"Yes, Master."
The first ritual on the list was a ceremony called an offering to Nagnamor. It was fairly straightforward, requiring only some troll blood, a sharp knife, and a pure maiden to be used as a sacrifice. Boxy now had ample amounts of the first 2 things, but the third had proven to be a problem since it wasn't quite sure where it would get a suitable victim. At least until it realized that Snack was rather overqualified for the job. Not only was she effectively immortal and therefore reusable, but she was also a woman who was neither poisoned nor diseased. Which was definitely what the ritual called for when it referred to a pure maiden. Okay, maybe not definitely, but that was probably sort of what it meant. There was a chance she was close enough, at the very least. Part 2.
"Master?"
said Zero, with more than a hint of worry in her voice.
"Are you sure you want to be—"
"Be quiet! I'm busy!"
Boxy really did not have the luxury to converse with Snack right now. This was its first time making occult sigils, and it needed to focus. Even if the demonology skill provided the knowledge of how these symbols should look, actually drawing them turned out to be a surprisingly difficult task. Especially when using thick, sticky troll blood as the paint and the uneven, grassy ground of the forest as the canvas. At least it had a decent brush, courtesy of the ransacked caravan from a few days ago. First, it made a 4.5-meter-wide circle of blood, which was pretty straightforward. Then it stuck a wooden stake right in the middle, tied Zira to it, and smeared her face with yet more blood. Then it had to draw 4 large symbols on the ground. They were quite squiggly and complicated, and messing up even once meant that it would have to create the ritual site from scratch. Cora was doing her best to simply watch the mimic work without uttering a peep, which was easier said than done. Laughter welled up within her every time she glanced at the pure maiden tied to the stake, and she tried her best to keep quiet, lest her master tie her up instead. She wasn't quite sure what this ritual was supposed to do, but at the very least it was bound to be interesting, especially considering how messed up the preparation was. Zero was thinking much the same, although she wasn't looking forward to the ceremony as much. mostly because she had a feeling something profoundly stupid was about to take place, with her as the center. Boxy kept preparing for the ritual for about 10 more minutes before it was done. The patterns it drew on the ground matched perfectly with those depicted by the demonology skill, so it concluded that this part of the preparation was done. All that was left was to speak out the incantation and kill the sacrifice. The incantation itself was long and had a bunch of difficult words, which presented a problem. The mimic was worried it would flub the incantation and ruin it, but at least it was confident that it could stab someone through the heart without missing.
Hack!
That was when Boxy remembered demons didn't actually have hearts. It understandably felt a bit cheated. All that hard work for naught. Stupid demons. They should have told it sooner they didn't have hearts. Of course, it completely ignored the fact that it never even asked them and just one-sidedly decided it was their fault. Ah, but there might be a way around this.
Snack, can you grow a heart inside your body?
Zira was technically a shapeshifter herself, so her master assumed she should have been capable of such a basic task.
No, master. My shapeshifting only affects my outside appearance.
Okay. Maybe it wouldn't be that easy.
Then can you grow one on the outside?
Maybe? I've never tried
it. Then try it now!
The succubus, who had her hands and feet tied behind her back against the wooden pole, looked down at her breasts. Well, she was trying to look at her stomach, but that was kind of impossible considering the sheer size of her cleavage. A small red pimple sprouted out of her tummy and grew rapidly in size until it became a sort of messy lump. It seemed that the succubus was struggling to replicate the organ in question.
No, no! That's wrong!
Said Boxy after a while. One of its tongue tentacles extended out until the moist tip was right in front of Zira's face. It then grew out slowly and steadily to form a perfect replica of a standard human heart.
Make one like this!
Can you do that again?
Zira spent the next half hour carefully mimicking the mimic until she was able to copy the vital organ to a satisfying degree. It was even beating, though it only pumped air. Honestly, though, the succubus was a little irked that her master was better than her at this stuff. But it couldn't be helped. That murderous box was rapidly becoming something akin to a virtuoso of the flesh, so her superficial skills had no way of matching its natural-born talents. Moreover, it was intimately familiar with hearts in particular. They were one of its favorite snacks, while Zira had never really seen one. Well, not intact and unblemished, at least.
Good,
said Boxy after confirming her external heart was in order.
Okay, now be quiet and stand still.
Next came the verbal part. It would be difficult to pronounce these words under normal circumstances, so the mimic's giant, lipless mouth was bound to mess it up. Thankfully, it already had just the solution to that problem. The pseudo-Zira made her appearance yet again, forcing the succubus to stare herself right in the eye with no option of turning away or objecting. As for Cora, she simply continued to watch the bizarre scene. Once Boxy felt confident enough to start, it coughed a few times to clear its newly made throat and started speaking with a clear, crisp voice.
Praesent gravida et ipsum in cursus. Facilis urna ipsum maximus et vilit vel, sodales faritra purus.
A cold gust of air swept through the ritual site.
Mycenas varius dul, velinum finibus consequat, morbi id cursus libero.
The wind started twisting and spinning around, just outside the circle of blood. The dust and sand it kicked up made it seem like there was a miniature tornado with Zira in the center.
Donex clerisque ligula non odio volputate blandit, cras latinia elitet massa bibendum fugiat.
Boxy's voice grew louder and deeper with each spoken word and seemed to echo unnaturally throughout the area. It was almost as if a second being was speaking alongside the mimic in an unholy chorus.
Set congue volputate fascibus, fuce tincidunt commodo nib quis elementum.
The four bloody sigils on the ground started boiling and hissing, releasing a thin red vapor that was swept up in the bizarre air current.
Mycenas atante et dulcem perverius, Cras condimentum uis mod lorem idigestes!
Boxy raised an iron dagger above its head, gripping it with both arms. The red smog started flowing towards it, seeping into the unblemished metal and tainting it with a bright crimson sheen.
Aliquam molesem quis vivere igestas, moris nulla porta odio, in uis mod nisi sepien sit amet justo.
The dagger started vigorously draining the mimic's MP. It glowed brighter and brighter, absorbing every last drop of Boxy's mystical energy within the span of a few seconds. Once it had absorbed it all, it began vibrating and shaking within its grasp as if it wanted to escape.
Sed ornare dolorerat, quis placerat, agre dignissimet.
Boxy slowly lowered the mana-imbued weapon and pointed it at the external heart of its familiar.
Praesent, ultritius, nagnamor!
Uttering the final three words, it thrust the dagger forward, piercing the succubus's heart completely.
Wait!
Screamed Cora in a panic.
Did you just say nagnamor?
But it was too late. Whatever the fiend was trying to say was lost in Zira's wailing and screaming. A bright red light poured out of her wound, as well as her eyes and mouth as she gave voice to her suffering. Her bound body rose gradually in the air, uprooting the wooden stake she was tied to and lifting it along with the rest of her. She reached an altitude of about 4 meters as the light pouring out of her grew in intensity until it rivaled that of the sun. The earth shook, the winds blew, the trees caught fire, and the clouds ran away. It all ended abruptly when Zira's body exploded with a white flash and a huge bang. The shockwave was more powerful than any magic the mimic could muster and covered a stupidly wide area. Both Boxy and Cora were thrown back and tumbled along the ground for several meters. When the spider chest regained its footing, it immediately turned its attention to the source of the explosion. Snack was gone. In her place was a 7-meter-tall humanoid creature. It had massive black goat hooves for feet, with thick, gray fur covering its legs up to its knees. Its thighs were enclosed with chalk-black metal greaves adorned with what appeared to be countless skulls. Its gauntlets, bracers, shoulder pads, and chest plate all had the same macabre design. A long, relatively thin tail protruded from its rear and ended in a tuft of gray hair, much like a lion's. A pair of gigantic wings, similar to Zira's, sprouted from its back. Its head was a wide, flaming skull with a protruding snout and jaws filled with sharp teeth. The head looked more like a dragon than a human. One thick, short horn adorned the tip of its snout while two more protruded outwards from the back of its head, curving in towards each other as if to form a giant circle of pitch-black bone. The unquenchable flames pouring out of its nostrils, eyes, mouth, and the back of its head threatened to burn this world to ashes. And most terrifying of all was the gigantic glaive it held in one hand. A single swing from that weapon was enough to cut down dozens of men. 4 blood-red sigils, exactly the same as the ones the mimic had drawn earlier, adorned the length of the blade, emitting an ominous-looking crimson fog.
"Who dares call upon me?"
It roared, spewing lava-like drool from its mouth. The creature, no, the demon, looked around for the one who had performed the ritual, but the only things around were a bewildered pit fiend, a barrel of blood, and a plain wooden chest. Boxy was befuddled. The knowledge from demonology stated this ritual would temporarily bring forth an unbound demon from the beyond, but it said nothing about it being so outrageously terrifying, which was precisely why it was currently trying its best to chest like it had never chested before.
Was it you, insect?
However, it was all for naught. The giant demon completely disregarded the flabbergasted Cora and pointed its massive weapon directly at the mimic. With hiding clearly off the table, Boxy began to weigh its options. Fighting this thing? Bad idea. Running away? Nope. Not gonna happen considering the difference in size. Sitting and hoping the big fiery scary thing went away? That was just denying reality. Ultimately, the flabbergasted mimic did the only thing it could think of. The same thing many of its victims had done, just before it had finished them off.
Yes, it was me. Please don't kill me.
It would shamelessly beg and grovel for its life.
It is good that you know your place. Tell me, little bug, what did you hope to gain from this communion?
Get stronger?
Ah! So you're after power, huh?
Yes.
I see. You sought to make my strength into your own, did you?
Well, no, I just—
Silence!
The demon screamed with a voice that seemed to extend to the far reaches of both heaven and earth.
You face Nagnamor, Overlord of the Flaming Legion.
Is that so?
The mimic replied with a casual tone that was completely ill-fitting with the situation. It had realized something that completely calmed it down.
That is right, puny mortal. The one that stands before you is Oblivion Incarnate. None who have stood before Nagnamor have been spared.
Oh. That's neat, Boxy said matter-of-factly. Same here.
Needless to say, its attitude did not do much to stifle the Overlord's mounting ire.
You dare mock me? Trifling Box, your arrogance will be your undoing.
Nagnamor raised his glaive with both arms and prepared to strike down the upstart chest. The mimic had no hope of survival if that house-sized weapon hit it head-on. It was dead meat, however one looked at it. The mass of fiend steel moved so fast it seemed to vanish from its position and appear just centimeters away from the mimic's faux wood shell. The wind pressure of the strike alone was powerful enough to knock over and uproot several trees in the surrounding area. It also sent Cora flying into the woods, as she hadn't been able to clear the area as quickly and silently as she had hoped. Yet, despite all that, Boxy remained perfectly unharmed.
What?
Nagnamor stared dumbly at it. The flames in his eye sockets flickered a few times as if he was blinking in disbelief. He raised his weapon and once more swung down with all his might, but the result was pretty much the same. The third time did not pan out so well either.
Sit down, commanded the mimic.
Do not presume to give me a—
Nagnamor's gigantic ass met the ground with a massive impact that caused a small tremor to travel through the soil. It happened involuntarily, as if someone else was in control of his body.
What?
Punch yourself.
The giant demon's massive armored fist made impact with his own skull, sending plumes of flames scattering about, nearly setting the forest on fire in the process.
Again.
The second blow made his jawbone crack.
And again.
And the third one broke off the horn on his snout.
Impossible,
he muttered.
How are you doing this?
The offering to Nagnamor was not that of a life, but a host, a physical body the powerful demon could possess in order to manifest himself in the physical realm. He would always appear in his true form and at the height of his power, but the amount of time he could maintain this state depended entirely on how much MP was used up in the ritual. Even if his visits to the mortal realm were short-lived, Nagnamor would be free to act as he pleased in order to make the most of them. This time, however, was different. The mimic had realized two simple things during their brief conversation. The first was that it had been talking to this overlord through the thought link normally reserved for its familiars. The second was that the notification confirming Zira had been banished from the physical realm never actually appeared. Trying to view her status simply showed a screen with garbled nonsense and unknown symbols, but that wasn't of particular concern. because the physical form of Zirababa Dabuth Lokrelela had been taken over and transformed by Nagnamor, Overlord of the Flaming Legion. It was technically still the same body.
I own you.
And the stipulations of the summoning contract still applied to it.